Last week we talked about Jonah. We talked about how Jonah is a fun story, and it can be very easy to think that the main thrust of the story is that God calls Jonah and Jonah refuses, but then God calls Jonah a second time and Jonah fills out his purpose. But when we looked back at the historical implications, the history and the social context at the time, we realize it also has a very powerful message about loving our enemies. Not loving them by feeling good toward them, but by actively helping them regardless of how we feel about them. Because that's what Jonah is called to do. He was called to help the Assyrians, which were longtime enemies, and enemies at the time that he was serving of the Israelite people. And he did not want to help them. He did not think that they deserved help. He did not think that they deserved mercy. He did not think that they deserved God's love. And he had a big bone to pick with them. And yet he acted in a loving manner toward them anyway. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do. In the United States, in Western culture, we like to think of love as an emotion. We like to think of love as a feeling. The problem with feelings and emotions is that they come and they go as quickly as the breeze can change directions. You will feel more loving towards someone if you don't have very much sugar and caffeine in your body. If you've had a whole bunch of sugar and caffeine and you're all agitated already, you may feel less loving towards the people you come in contact with. Am I right? Okay? If you didn't have breakfast that morning, you might not feel as loving towards people. If you don't have enough sleep, if you had a bit of bad beef the night before, you might not feel as loving. But in the Bible, love is not how you feel. Love is an action. It's how you behave towards people, regardless of how you're feeling in any given moment. And so, as we look at the passage this morning, where Christ says that he's calling these fishermen to learn how to be fishers of men, I thought it would be interesting to look at some of the people that he fished for, some of the people that he reached out to, some of the people that he brought into the fold. Because we know that Christ ministered to the outcast, right? We know that he ministered to people that traditionally were not loved within their communities. But there are also very serious historical implications for the people that he reached out to, and I want to talk to you a little bit about them today, just a few of them. First of all, there was the Samaritan woman at the well. Were you familiar with this story? The Samaritan woman at the well. And we like to think that because she had been with several different men, she was divorced, that she was an outcast for society, that Christ reached out to her for that reason and bridged that gap and gives hope to divorced women everywhere that they can still be loved and welcomed in their church communities. And that's important. But it's also important that she was Samaritan. It's important that she was Samaritan. Samaritan means that she lived in Samaria. Remember we talked about the split of the northern and the southern kingdoms? The capital of the southern kingdom was Judah. That's where the temple was. The capital of northern Israel was Samaria. That's where she was from. These two kingdoms were at odds with one another. They were longtime enemies. Do you get that? They had been one kingdom and they split. And then the Assyrians exiled northern Israel. Most of the people were removed. We don't know what happened to all of those people. A few remained. And then a couple hundred years later, Babylon sacked southern Israel and exiled people. Later, many of them returned. But in the meantime, hundreds of years had gone by. And they had developed different customs. The people in northern Israel kept practicing their own brand of Judaism without a temple, remaining in their homeland. A few of them, not a lot. Most of them had disappeared. The rest had gone out in the diaspora, lived as minority populations in different countries with different languages and different cultures, absorbed those cultures, and then come back. So by the time they all got back, they were practicing starkly different versions of Judaism. And so as people often do when they find that they are practicing a slightly different religion than other people, they started arguing about it. Who's right? who's more righteous. And because southern Israel had the temple, and then they had Jerusalem, and they're a kingdom again, they were able to say, well, all y'all, what y'all are doing in Samaria, that doesn't count. That's not real Judaism. All your rituals, all of your practices, those don't count. And so when Christ reached out to this woman, he was bridging a gap that went back hundreds of years. They didn't throw in the fact that she was Samaritan by accident. When people heard that, that's a big deal. That's bridging. That's healing. That's loving your enemy, regardless of how Christ may have felt about their individual practices at the time. And I'm sure he had opinions on that. I'm sure he had feelings about that. But he welcomed her anyway. The Syrophoenician woman and Gentile who had a demon in her daughter and came to Christ to ask for help. And he said, no. No. Why should we give the crumbs to... Why should we feed the dogs when the children need food first? Remember that? When he calls her a dog? That's not an accident. That went back. She was Syrophoenician. That's another word for Greek. Now, the book of Maccabees, there's four books of Maccabees in the Bible, but it's in the Apocrypha. We don't generally see it in our Protestant Bible. But it's written about an actual revolt that happened about 150 years before Christ was born. Now, after, you gotta memorize the big bads here. So there's Egypt, big bad, right? Then the next big bad was the Assyrians, then the Babylonians and the Persians. They weren't so bad. They were actually okay, but they were big. They were big. Nothing to be messed around with. The next big bad was the Greeks and then the Romans. By the time we get to Christ's time, we have the Romans. So at this point, the big bad was the Greeks. And they did okay at first. You know, they kind of lived in peace. Jewish culture absorbed Greek culture and they were doing okay until Antiochus came along. He came along and he decided that he just didn't like what the Jewish people were doing. He didn't like their practices. He was worried that they might be a little bit of a threat. And so he started passing laws to limit what they could and could not do. He started passing laws like, you're not allowed to circumcise your children anymore. Okay? You're not allowed to just worship one God anymore. You have to worship other gods. And he went in there and he sacked their temple and put up all of his little statues so that they would have to worship other gods. And if they didn't, the penalty was death. So the Maccabean revolt was when a group of folks, the Maccabees, decided they weren't going to take this any longer, and they declared war on Antiochus and on the Greek Empire. You see that? And it was a long battle, and there was a lot of bloodshed on both sides. So there's some bad blood between the Greeks and the Israelite people that went back. They even got to the point where the Jews would go out and they would hide in the wilderness, and Antiochus would only send people out to fight on the Sabbath, to attack on the Sabbath, because he knew that they couldn't fight back because they couldn't work on the Sabbath. That's how bad it was. So when this Syrophoenician, when this Greek woman, who was a Gentile, comes to Christ and says, help me with my daughter, and he says, why should we feed the dogs when the children need food first? There's a reason why he has that hostility, why he has that venom in his voice when he speaks to her. This was recent history. This was within the past 150 years. And she says, this is the only woman, the only person in the Bible that gets Christ to change his mind. She says, yeah, well, even the dogs get the crumbs from the table when the children drop it. And anyone who has dogs and has children knows exactly what we're talking about, right? Knows exactly what we're talking about. And she says that to him, and he changes his mind, and he helps her. Now, seconds prior, he had venom in his voice. But regardless of how he felt, he still helped her. He behaved in a loving manner towards her, and he gave her what she needed, and he healed her daughter for her. Then we have the Herodians. They come to him and they ask about Caesar's coin. Remember that story? They come and they say, yeah, should we pay taxes to the emperor or not? That's the question on the table. It's a loaded question. I preached on this some time ago. I'm sure you all remember it exactly. every word, so I don't have to explain it again. And he asks, and he says, give me the coin. Remember that? Give me the coin. Whose image is on this coin? It's Caesar's. He says, well, give unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and give unto God that which is God, which begs the question, if this belongs to Caesar because it has Caesar's image on it, then what belongs to God? What has God's image on it? What is created in God's image? Mm-hmm. And he says that to the Herodians. Now, the Herodians were people that followed Herod, King Herod. Remember the Herods? These were the big bad. They worked for the Roman government. They were not Israelite by birth. They converted in so that they could climb the political ladder, and they did so very quickly by being ruthless and by being dishonest and by being corrupt. There was a lot of bad blood between them because they were ruling over the Israelite people, but actually answering to Rome. They were not representative of the people that they claimed to represent. And there was a lot of animosity between Christ and between the Herods from the beginning, from the moment he was born. Remember? Remember the three magi came looking, and King Herod said, well, where is this baby? Because he wanted to kill the baby. That was Herod. This was the next generation of them. There was a lot of bad blood between there. And what does Christ ask these folks? Remember what he tells them? He says, give to Caesar that which is Caesar, and give to God that which is God. And he reminds them. He reminds them in whose image they are created. Now, that doesn't mean they're best pals, but he still reaches out to them with that message of love and inclusion, and reminds them that they are God's people too, and that they still have choices. They can still make good choices about how they behave and who they represent. He reaches out in love regardless of how he feels, because he speaks out about the government all the time. But when he comes face to face with the Herodians, he treats them with loving kindness. There's a Canaanite woman who comes with her daughter, who needs healing for her daughter because her daughter is near death, actually at death. And this is interesting because the Canaanites go way back. The Canaanites go way, way, way back. If you go all the way back to the beginning, to Genesis, where remember Noah? Everybody knows Noah. Okay, so Noah, we remember Noah, we remember the ark, we remember the dove, we remember the flood, yes, we remember all the animals. Do we remember what happened after they landed? Noah planted the first vineyard. Did you know that? Noah planted the first vineyard, which produced the first grapes, which he crushed to make the first alcoholic beverage, which he drank, and he became the first person to become intoxicated. That is Noah's claim to fame. Besides the ark thing, he was the first person to get smash-faced drunk, and he passed out in his tent. And with no pants on. Okay? So, yeah, I know. We all like to think of Noah like shepherding these little animals two by two into the ark. And he did do that. But when he got back, he had this little scene. He drank some wine, a little too much wine, and passed out in his tent with no pants on. He had three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And Ham was the one that happened to come upon that scene when he went into the tent to check on something. Okay? So he goes in and he sees his father in all his glory. And what he ends up doing is he comes out and tells his brothers, we have a problem. So his brothers do this elaborate thing with a blanket, and they like back into the tent so they can't see anything, holding the blanket, and throw the blanket over their father. So Ham was the only son that actually saw his altogether. Okay? And because of this, he was cursed. And this is an etiological tale. This is a tale of how things came to be, because the whole earth had been wiped out, right? You have Noah, and then you have the three sons, and those three sons ended up becoming the heads of great nations. And you see right after this, these are the descendants of the sons, and they list all of the countries and all of the peoples that came from these three sons. And Ham is most of northern Africa, all of the people that came from northern Africa, including the Canaanites. And these were the people that were the most bitter enemies of Israel. It goes all the way back. That's how badly people thought of Canaanites. And yet, when this woman comes to Christ for help, he helps her. Regardless of what he thought of Noah, and he knew his Old Testament. He knew his Old Testament. We know this because he's always quoting it here and there throughout the scriptures. He helped her, regardless of how he felt. He decided to behave towards her in a loving manner, in a godly manner. And he helped her daughter, and he healed her daughter, and sent them on their way. And finally, we have the centurion. Remember the centurion? This was a big surprise. This guy comes up to Christ and he says, "My servant, one of my most beloved servants, is deathly ill. Please come help him." Remember this? Do you know what a centurion was?
A guard for the Romans.
He was one of the highest levels of guards for the Roman army. And the Roman army was the big bad of the day. The Roman army was the ones that reported to Caesar in Rome and that were terrorizing the Israelite people, taxing the heck out of them, threatening them, arresting them. They had unchecked power, superior weaponry, and vast numbers. And they used it. They used it. And Christ speaks out about that. Christ makes fun of the Pax Romana, this Roman peace that was enforced by brutal means. It's a false peace. He speaks out against this over and over and over again. But when a centurion guard comes to him and says, "Please help me, my servant is ill, and you are the only one that can help him," does Christ say, "Oh, no, 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 see, we got bad blood between the two of us. We go way back. I know about all you. No way." No, he goes and he helps. Regardless of how he felt in the moment, regardless of this history, he went back and helped this person in his home and saved his servant. So we see these wonderful examples, not only of behaving in a loving manner, but in healing rifts between ancient enemies. Do you see that? It's a powerful example of how healing can occur. When regardless of how we're feeling, we take that step forth to behave in a loving manner. It shows us that going way back, you go all the way back to Canaanites, we're talking Noah's flood, way back. It's never too late. It's never too late to do the right thing, to bridge those gaps, to overcome that animosity. It is not an accident that all of these people, they could have just listed them as a woman came to a well, a woman came with her daughter, a man came and asked for help with his servant, a gentleman came and had a question about taxes. These weren't random people. These were representatives of ancient enemies of Israel, going back thousands of years in some cases. And in every single instance, Christ loved his enemies and started healing those wounds, bridging those gaps, and behaving in a loving manner, regardless of whether or not he'd had breakfast that morning, gotten enough sleep. He behaved in a loving manner. And as a result of that, love was able to grow. The warm, fuzzy feelings were able to start to grow between the Israelites and these populations. And as Christianity spread, all of these people were then embraced, and it opened it up. Not because someone waited until the loving feeling started and then decided to take the step, but because someone took the step, and the step allowed the warm, fuzzy feelings to come. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Can I get an amen to that?
Amen. Amen.